Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
How's it, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Command Zone. I'm your host, Josh Lee Kwai.
And I'm DJ.
We're back. And DJ, you should be excited.
I'm so excited. What we are doing today is we are breaking down my favorite, my treasured deck. It's Braid's Conjure Adept. This deck is amazing because it plays with huge creatures, plays with board politics. You connive with your opponents while helping others. It is just over the top. My favorite.
All right.
Josh, it's my favorite.
I know, it's your baby. I played against it a few times now. It's a really sweet deck. But before we get into it, we're going to be talking about a bunch of cards here, an awesome commander deck. And if you want to pick up any of these cards or any other cards for any of your decks, please go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. If you use that affiliate link when you order your Magic Singles product, anything at all, you really are supporting this show, this channel, all of our content, including game nights, keeping us on the air, keeping the lights on. We really do appreciate it. And while you're there, or if you're at your LGS, really all around the world, you can find Ultra Pro products as well. And they make really sweet, like, playmats. We have, they have this Black Lotus theme stuff that's out there now. There's, oh yes, you also have the Full Art Island.
Can I just, like, support Island today? I'm just all about blue right now.
Well, we figured,
by the way, the best card in Magic.
I know that you
think you have the best card in Magic, Black Lotus, but actually Basic Island, best card in Magic.
You make a strong case. Well, Braids is mono blue, so I figured you should have the island.
Thank you.
This Black Lotus stuff, there is actually sleeves, there's deck boxes, there's a wall scroll that you may have seen in the background of Game Night, so that's a bunch of stuff Ultra Pro has out there. Check that stuff out. Again, whenever you purchase their products, you are supporting us, so it's just like gravy, it's value. And another way to support all of our content is directly if you go to patreon.com/commandzone. And in fact, we call out one lucky patron every single episode, and this episode is dedicated to Judson Wall. Judson, you rock.
Thanks, Judson.
Judson. I almost said Justin, but it's Judson. I'm sure he's never heard that before. Okay, sorry. I always got to make a comment about somebody's name.
Josh, we got to talk about Braids. So who is Braids?
Braids is a conjurer adept.
To be confused with the mono black Braids, which is banned. So sometimes when we're talking about Braids, there are two of them.
So when we say Braids in relation to Commander, this is the one we mean. We mean the mono blue Braids. Let me read the card really quick so everybody's on the same page. She's 2 blue-blue for a 2/2 legendary creature, human wizard. That can be important. She says, at the beginning of each player's upkeep, that player may put an artifact, creature, or land card from their hand onto the battlefield. This is a crazy interesting card. Is there anything you want to, like, let the audience know right up front about, like, because I think people get a little confused the first time they read this card.
This trigger is incredibly powerful. The problem is that it works for everyone. So you play Braids, and it's nowhere near your upkeep. You have to pass the turn, and then your opponent gets a Braids trigger. So before they draw, that's important. They just get to put artifact, creature, land just straight onto the battlefield. And that can definitely be good for your opponent.
What's one of our favorite sayings on the show? One of the most powerful things you can do in Magic, maybe the most powerful thing in all of Magic, is cheating of mana cost. And this is literally giving it to your opponents before you get it.
Yeah, so then it goes to that opponent, and then it goes to your next opponent, and then it goes to your next opponent, and then you finally get an opportunity to use your own Braids trigger. So this, on its surface, seems real bad.
Yeah, it does seem bad when you look at it. However, one thing I'll say about Braids when you do look at it is that it always creates fun games because everyone's going to do stuff, which is a really cool thing. And I think the challenge of this deck, and something that, you know, when I've played against you, I've noticed that you've done very well, is making that ability really work for you and against your opponents a little bit.
We're going to be talking about the politics of Braids all throughout this episode. But starting off, one thing that you need to know is that you are playing a group hug deck. You're technically not. But
you are giving things to your opponents.
You're giving stuff to your opponent. You have to make sure that they feel like they like the stuff they're getting. And maybe you have some table talk. You're like, hey, Josh, should I play Braids now?
Yeah, do you have anything you want to cheat
in? Like, is anything... As soon as Josh says yes, he is way less likely to kill my own braids before it's my turn. You have to make, and this is psychological. You have to make them say like, oh, yeah, I'll take a braids.
Yeah, I want that. Yeah, that'd be sweet.
You want, okay, I'm going to do braids. And then so you play braids and then Josh almost never kills braids. It's almost always the person that doesn't have something good to put into play.
Yeah.
That kills the braids. They see everything going on at the table. They're like, oh, no, no. And they kill braids. And that's what you want to avoid. Okay. But let's get right into it, Josh.
Sure.
Let's talk about just the coolest, biggest, most awesome things that you can put into play off of braids.
Yeah, that's
what we're here for, right?
Yeah, everybody, I think, has the first initial thought when they see this card, which is, what are the awesome things I'm going to put into play when it's my turn with the trigger?
We're getting ready to talk about politics, but everyone's like, what are the big creatures?
Yeah, that's the fun part. So
let's talk about some big creatures.
Let's talk about how to abuse braids' trigger. This is... a favorite of the show recently. Since you've come on, we've talked about it a few times, so it must be a card you like.
I do like it.
Yeah.
I do like it.
I mean, who doesn't? If it's you can get it out, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So this is It That Betrays. It is 12 mana for an 11/11 Eldrazi. It has Annihilator 2, and whenever an opponent sacrifices a non-token permanent, put that card onto the battlefield under your control.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can get braids out, if you could get this out early and you can annihilate someone, not only does that cripple their game plan, sometimes they're sacrificing what they put into play with braids and you get it.
Yeah, that's the thing about It That Betrays an Annihilator. It has a way to make the opponent sacrifice things on it, in which case normally you get two lands, which is also awesome. And as we've learned, actually, we probably never want to give two lands anymore, because we've learned that the biggest advantage you can get in a game of Commander, I'm referring to our stats episodes recently, is to have more lands in play than your opponents. That's the single biggest indicator we could find of who's going to win the game. So that
and
almost
people
tells
might want to do that too. They might be like, okay, so I just put this cool angel into play from your braids trigger. I don't want you to have that. And they think that the lands are disposable. And so they'll just toss those over and they're really putting themselves at a huge disadvantage.
Yeah. And before you know it, you've got more lands than anybody else and therefore the best chance to win the game. Yeah. It That Betrays is pretty sweet. Here's a Craig Blanchett favorite. And he has cheated it in on me and killed me with it a few times. It's Blightsteel Colossus. It's another 12 mana. It's an 11/11 artifact creature golem. It has trample and infect. Trample and infect on an 11/11 is pretty bad for you, because the infect is going to get in there. You can't like throw a little chump blocker in front of it. And then it says Blightsteel Colossus is indestructible. just in case you were like, oh no, I'll just get rid of it. It's hard. And then it has that normal rider clause that goes on a lot of really big things so that you can't reanimate it from... It's trying to make it so you can't reanimate from the graveyard. You can't cheat it in that way. But braids, yeah, you can still put it into play. It says if Blightsteel Colossus would be put into a graveyard from anywhere, reveal Blightsteel Colossus and shuffle it into its owner's library instead. So, yeah, you can't like discard it and then reanimate, you know, animate dead it on turn two like we used to do.
So this is just a way to end the game super early. And a lot of the Eldrazi do something pretty similar. We mentioned an Eldrazi, so we thought we'd mention some infect ways.
I don't know if it's going to end the game a lot of times, because it's got to swing three times. It's definitely going to end the game for somebody, though.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. It might not end the game for everyone, but it's gonna kill someone if it ends up on the battlefield.
If you play Braids on 4 and then Blightsteel on 5 and then untap with it on 6, somebody's dead.
That's going to be great. So we mentioned one Eldrazi, by the way, but all of the good old Eldrazi with Annihilator work really well.
Yep.
Even Emrakul, the new one, is
new Emrakul.
Fine.
Do you get the cast trigger?
You don't get the cast trigger. So
it's still huge and awesome.
So that's one of the things that you wanna pay attention to, is that you don't get the cast trigger on these things. But sometimes people play the new Emrakul or the new Ulamog along with them as well, even though the Annihilator is clearly better. If we want a card that does a lot on the battlefield,
oh boy,
this is a mean one, by the way. We're like covering all the mean stuff straight up. It's Jingataxis Core Augur. 10 mana, 8 blue for a 5/4 legendary creature praetor. It's got flash, and at the beginning of your end step, draw 7 cards.
Ugh. That's pretty good.
That's
but it's
so many cards.
It's really the next part that makes it.
Each opponent's maximum hand size is reduced by 7.
So they can't.
So
have
everyone
hands.
At the end of their turn, just their cleanup step, they're just like, "Welp," and they throw away their whole hand.
I like this. Listen, I don't like this card, but I like it in the deck, and it goes along with the philosophy I have, which is I want my card to do something now, right? So, It That Betrays, Blightsteel Colossus, really cool, really big, really awesome. If you get to do something with them, Jin Gitaxias, the window of opportunity for your opponent to do something about it is way smaller.
Yeah, you're right.
Especially the first person you pass the turn to is like, crap. If they don't have a kill spell, they're going down to zero cards probably. You know, they're going to cheat one thing in and then go down to zero cards, which means your Braids is way better from then on.
It's way better, yeah.
Yeah.
So I wanted to mention this card because, it, like you said, it's really, really good. I don't play Jin Gitaxias in my version.
Because if you play, here's the thing I'll say. You mentioned how you're in a group hug deck. Mm-hmm. Your play group is going to catch up to the fact that Jin Gitaxias is in your deck, in which case, from then on, they will never let you play this deck how you want it to. If I see Jin Gitaxias come out from somebody's Braid decks one time, every time I play that Braids deck from now on, I'll kill it as soon as possible or try to kill them as soon as possible because it's just too scary.
Sometimes an underwhelming card, you know, maybe like a Stormtide Leviathan or something like that, might be even better because people are like, oh, that's kind of cool. You're playing a big old monster. Look at that Leviathan. And they still buy into this group hug. I'm putting quotes around it. Which, by the way, the audio version can't see at all.
So, but even It That Betrays. So,
like, it's basically you kind of play as a group hug and you have group hug aspects, but you need to be able to be super aggressive at the right time. And you have to ride that line really, really carefully. And I think Jin Gitaxias just takes it way over the top. Like you said, no, you're never going to convince anyone that you're doing anything good. And even when you say, yes, you'll want Braids, if you know there's a possibility of Jin Gitaxias, you might kill Braids anyways before it ends up being my turn.
Yeah.
You lose political advantage.
Things like It That Betrays, even Blightsteel Colossus, they feel more fair because you do have to attack with them. So I feel like I had a chance to do something about it. Jin Gitaxias can feel unfair.
It prevents your opponents from playing Magic versus like just smashing face. And there's a big difference in the mindset of Magic players with that.
So here's a new card that came out with, when did the Elder Dinosaurs come out? Rivals of Ixalan?
Ixalan or Rivals?
Yeah, so I like to see this guy. And this is actually a really cool card to have in play. It's Nezahal, Primal Tide, 5 blue-blue, 7 mana for a 7-7 legendary creature. Elder Dinosaur, it says Nezahal, Primal Tide, can't be countered if you ever were going to cast it, but you're going to put it in with Braids. Yeah. It says, you have no maximum hand size. Always nice.
Great against opposing Jin Gitaxias.
Yep. Whenever an opponent casts opposing Jin Gitaxias,
yeah, exactly.
Just great in those instances.
They're just all like, over the place.
Where everyone's got a Jin Gitaxias. You're like, I don't care.
Like, I'm fine. Except for they're still drawing 7 cards.
Yeah, it's true. I still care, actually.
I still care.
Okay. Nezahal also says, whenever an opponent casts a non-creature spell, you draw a card.
There it is.
That's a really cool... It's like Niv-Mizzet a little bit, the new Niv-Mizzet.
Yeah, or like Mystic Remora. They kind of said, oh, Mystic Remora grew up and became a huge monster. Yeah.
Became that Jurassic World dinosaur. And then it says, discard 3 cards and you exile Nezahal and then return it to the battlefield tapped under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. So this is a way to protect Nezahal if there's something that's going to kill it. And because it has card draw stapled to it, you don't maybe necessarily mind discarding the 3 cards as much because you can get some of those cards back or you've already gotten enough value out of it.
I've essentially kept Nezahal on the battlefield and chucked cards to it over and over again because it kind of turned into a sort of Phyrexian Arena, sort of like an effect that just generated me a bunch of card draw.
It's non-creature spell. So if they play a Mana Rock, you draw a card. If they play a Planeswalker, you draw a card. So it, when I said it's like Niv-Mizzet, it's actually a little better than that as far as the card drawing capability.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But it is opponent, whereas I believe Niv-Mizzet is anybody casting a spell. So, okay, listen, I'm just trying to cover my bases for the comment section. Everybody, it's fine.
Okay. So... part of abusing the trigger, by the way,
I like
is
this
having,
next section. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is my favorite section.
It's your favorite section. Of course it is. Part of abusing the trigger could be having bigger creatures than your opponent. Because if everything is equal and everything's putting it, stuff into play and your stuff is just bigger and more awesome, great. You're sort of winning that race. Although it's going to be really hard to win something when it's 3-1.
Okay? True.
But one way to sort of make sure that this isn't as even is making sure that you get the first Braids trigger. And you can do that through Flash.
Yep.
Cards like Vidalcan Ori.
What card is that?
it gives your spells flash. Leyline of Anticipation, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Really good. Winding Canyons.
Mm-hmm, sweet card.
Is a land that you can activate to give your things flash.
Your creatures, yep.
Also, Teferi, Mage of Zelfir.
This one we haven't talked about as much.
We haven't. So let's talk about Teferi, because it also gives you a level of protection, too.
So Teferi, Mage of Zelfir, this is Teferi, not the Planeswalker, is 2 blue, so 5 mana total for a 3/4 legendary human wizard, has flash, and it says creature cards you own that aren't on the battlefield have flash, and it says each opponent can cast spells only anytime he or she could cast a sorcery. So it gives you instant speed with all your creatures and shuts down all the instant speed from your opponents.
Yeah.
There are certain locks with Teferi, actually, where...
Knowledge pool.
Yeah, you make it so they can't actually cast things anymore.
Because basically there's certain cards that only have you cast it at instant speed because there's something on the stack.
Mm-hmm.
Knowledge pool does that because basically... It's probably a complicated combo to explain, but basically you still have something on the stack and then it makes you cast something different. But the rules say, well, hold on there. This is not at sorcery speed, even though this is in your main phase, because there's something on the stack.
Yeah.
So you get locked out. You could put Knowledge Pool in this deck if you want to. It's an artifact.
It's not as good because with Braids, they can still get some things out that won't trigger Knowledge Pool. And you're not that mean. Otherwise, you'd put Jyn Gataxias in.
I've played Knowledge Pool before.
Yeah. Well, I've played Knowledge Pool, but not with Teferi.
I've played them both before.
Right, you're more mean than I am.
It's a fun combo. It's so expensive. All right.
DJ's idea of fun. And everybody thinks you're the fun one, and I'm the, like, poo-poo everything
How
downer
guy.
How much
mana does that combo cost? You deserve to win if you get that onto the battlefield.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, but let's get back to Teferi, because we might be focusing on the flash aspect, which is why it's in this category. Hey, flash and Teferi, flash and Braids, everything is
we
good.
We should explain that. So the play pattern you're going for with Orrery, Leyline, Winding Canyons, Teferi is on the end step before your turn, you flash in Braids. So then when you go to your upkeep, you're the first one to get Braids as trigger.
Ding. And yeah. Then you have a bunch of untapped mana to do more stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you're not like in the position that we talked about where it's like your three opponents have something awesome and you're the last one to put it out. Even if they let you do that, they're still getting you to use their stuff first.
Exactly.
Yeah.
One thing that's also very, very important is that it provides a level of protection for your Braids. Because it only lets your opponents cast at sorcery speed, that means that when you flash your Braids in, they can't remove it.
Yeah.
They literally can't remove it at instant speed.
You're going to get that trigger.
Or, yeah, exactly. Or let's say you have a gigantic monster on your side of the battlefield. Suddenly, they can't interact with that at instant speed either.
Yep.
So once it gets around to your turn and you have a Teferi out, you're pretty well protected against a lot of their spells.
And think late game, too. If Teferi's out, instead of doing anything with Braids, you could actually just have enough mana to cast, you know, your Blightsteel Colossus on the end step. And because Teferi's out, they're in real trouble trying to deal with it. You untap.
They can't counter it
as
either.
Virtual haste now because it was on the end step before you turn. And you're swinging with Blightsteel and they can't counter it. And they can't use instant speed removal and they're dead.
Oh, Teferi, you are great. One other thing to do when you are dealing with this trigger is you can deny the trigger from certain opponents. And one way to do that is with Riptide Laboratory. We mentioned a little bit of a wizard sub theme. Riptide Laboratory.
Laboratory.
It says it's just a normal land and it taps for colorless mana, but you can pay 1 and a blue and tap it to return target wizard you control to its owner's hand. That means that you can go around the battlefield and you could say, okay, I'm going to give you a trigger and you a trigger, but then I'm going to bounce Braids back and not give you a trigger. That's a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
Or let's say you don't have anything good to put into play. You could just pick up Braids whenever you need to and say, no one gets any triggers until I get something good in my hand.
And if you have that flash stuff going on, then what you can do is just flash it on the end step of your turn, drop something big, bounce it to your hand, and just sit there and wait till your end step again and do that again, because you deny it to all three of your opponents and only take advantage of it yourself.
Very little downside,
yeah.
And it gives you more control over what is basically a very chaotic game.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mentioned it's a pretty chaotic game. Let's try and control some of that chaos.
Yeah, so we talked here about this first section was kind of like how you take advantage of the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And this next section is how you sort of minimize your opponent's use of the trigger.
Yep, that's exactly right. And my favorite way to minimize my opponent's use of the trigger is to actually let them have it, but redirect them at the opponents. This is where politics plays a huge part. And this is also where subtle spells and having the right things at your disposal can send the opponent somewhere else. For example, you noticed just having a Maze of Ith sometimes doesn't just redirect one creature, but redirects your opponents at each other for multiple turns.
It's so awesome. It's so good. If the first person doesn't make you use it,
then it just works on the next person. It works on the next person.
And also,
and
the
never
first,
use it.
Also, the first person must have attacked someone else with their thing, which means that the other one of the other two people is now a little bit mad at them for getting attacked. And so they're actually less likely to make you use the Maze of Ith because they got to get the person back for what they did to them. It just snowballs so fast.
Oh,
it's so good. Yeah.
But there's other cards that do this too. We talk about Propaganda all the time along with Maze of Ith. We talk about it all the time.
Yep.
Another card, Aether Spouts. We talk about that all the time.
I think on our show, we've talked about it less. This is a really good card, probably one that doesn't get enough play for us. We did sort of address it a little bit talking about blue. We were talking about Cyclonic Rift and how it didn't have enough of these type of effects.
Yeah, well, this kind of touches upon a larger concept. Aether Spouts is a very reactive spell. If your opponents attack you, you can cast it, and it sends their creatures to the top of their library.
Right.
Or the bottom
All the
of
creatures
library.
That are attacking you, yeah.
Yeah, so it's really just destructive if your opponents attack you. And that brings up a really great way of redirecting your opponents at other people besides you is just having open mana. If you just have open mana and you've demonstrated the ability to have an Aether Spouts or to have that rapid hybridization or that removal spell, you are very, very powerful because you're just sitting there being mono blue with your tricks in your hand being like, you know, I wouldn't attack me if I were you.
It's going to go bad for you if you attack me. Listen, yeah. Why don't you just attack them and then you can have your fun?
You do realize this deck is built around this concept, right?
Yeah, like I built this deck and I thought, boy, no one's ever going to get anything big into play.
I'm just going to never have any interaction whatsoever. Yeah, go ahead.
And then the people are like, I'm going to attack Jimmy.
Exactly. But that's super powerful. Yep. So that's another reason why playing at flash speed is really, really critical because holding up mana is the threat that you really want. There's another card that redirects, doesn't really redirect your opponent, but could shut down their combat, and I love it. Do you want to talk about this card?
Sure, it's Fate Spinner. One blue blue for a 1/2 human wizard. It says, at the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, that player chooses draw step, main phase, or combat phase. The player skips each instance of the chosen step or phrase this turn. So,
Josh, what would you like to skip? Your draw step, your main phase, or your combat phase?
It's the worst because nobody wants to not draw the card, but usually combat's what people skip, right? This just tends
almost
to be...
Almost always they skip combat.
Because it feels as if you'll get too far behind if you just don't play things.
Josh, do you know what else you can't play if you skip your main phase? Lands.
You can't play a land.
You can't hit your land drop.
Yeah.
Make sure you remind them. You're like, hang on.
If you skip the main phase,
if you try to attack me in your combat, you can't play your land drop.
Yeah.
You really want to get that? Did you watch the stats episode?
That's what I was going to say. We just learned don't miss land drops for any reason ever. Yeah. You don't want to not draw the cards because we know that drawing cards is what keeps you with enough cards in your hand to hit land drops. You don't want to miss land drops. You don't want to not develop your board. And so combat step is always the thing. And so it kind of like...
You give them great big toys, creatures on the battlefield. That's fine. And then you kind of just keep having them
make it hard for them to use
combat step. Then what you do is people are going to get frustrated if they have all these great creatures and you can't attack. Then what you do is you're like, look, I know you want to attack. I'm going to attack into you. And you can block it. It'll go away. And then that'll free up your combat step as long as you attack Josh.
Yeah, it's great.
The deal works all the time.
Yeah,
or you laboratory it back to your hand because guess what? It's a wizard.
Yep. It's so good. And if you've got Flash, you could just play it on the next person, you know, right at the end step.
So good.
I'll let you attack if you won't attack me. And then, you don't want to make that deal? Well, I'll flash it back in.
Oh, my gosh. I love it so much. It's so good. All right. So redirecting your opponent is by far the best. But if you can actually let them have an awesome creature and then you just steal it, that's like second best for me. I'll take that. I'll take your awesome creature.
And one thing about this deck is you know they're going to get their best creatures and artifacts out.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to get those out because you're letting them put stuff into play for free. And most good Magic players are going to look at their hand and be like, well, what's the best thing? Let's put that out now, because why wouldn't I? Because I'm not paying the mana.
I'll put out Avacyn.
Yeah.
I'll put out, you know, crazy Eldrazi or Titans, all sorts of crazy stuff. So one of the best cards in this category is Gilded Drake. It's one and a blue for a 3-3 Drake with flying. And when Gilded Drake comes into play, exchange control of Gilded Drake for target creature one of your opponent's controls, or sacrifice Gilded Drake. Basically, it's a 2 mana to switch this 3-3 flyer with your best creature.
Mm-hmm. Here, you have the 3-3 flyer, and I'll take that Avacyn.
Is a 3-3 flyer a reasonable creature, Josh?
I mean...
How about this? Are you afraid of a 2-2 swan token?
Yeah.
With flying?
No.
So a 3-3 Drake token with flying.
What I love about this is you're like, put something awesome out. Thank you for giving that to me.
And this is, it's so cheap that it's very castable.
Yeah. That's Two mana is really what kind of does it.
Yeah. Now, that might be more of the spiky side, because Gilded Drake is a little bit of an expensive card. It's really great because you can play it for just 2 mana and still develop your board. Mm-hmm. So you've taken a huge threat. But if you want to just kind of go over the top with awesomeness, Josh, you were running this in a lands deck.
Yeah, a 5-color lands deck. And this was one of my finishers. It's Royal Elemental. It's 3 blue, blue, blue. So 6 mana total for a 3-2 elemental with flying. It has landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you may gain control of target creature for as long as you control Royal Elemental. You won't normally play this until you have, it's your sixth turn, you play it and then hit your land drop. Or maybe you have a fetch land, get two things, you know, even like an Evolving Wilds or something will work in that case. It's a little bit fragile because if they destroy or get rid of Royal Elemental, then they get the stuff back.
Everything goes back.
Yeah,
you're right.
But still.
It is a little bit fragile, but it's really fun.
It's really, really cool.
You know what else is fun? Braids can put lands into play. So like later, let's say this lasts a whole turn. I don't know if it's gonna, but you could just be like, Braids trigger, put a land into play, trigger Royal Elemental.
Play my land for
drop
turn.
For turn.
Steal two things, maybe three or four if it's fetch lands. Yeah.
Myriad Landscape is a good card for this deck. It's a monocolor deck.
And
that
you get
needs
three
ramp.
Things you get to steal.
Yeah.
That's pretty sweet. Yeah, I like Royal Elemental a lot.
Totally. There's lots of cards that steal stuff. Some of the enchantments are good too, but because you can't put them into play on a Braids trigger, you kind of don't play the typical control magic cards, although there's nothing wrong with playing them. But for example, a Sower of Temptation, that's a creature that you can abuse with the Braids trigger if you need to.
It's always going
to
be better than the control magic, basically.
Than a control magic. Yeah, sometimes it's easier to take out a creature and get your thing back, but sometimes it doesn't feel right to like play only a 4-drop with Braids, but sometimes that's what you need to do is play the Sower of Temptation, steal something, have your mana available to develop your board a little bit more.
Yeah, we probably didn't hit that hard enough at the beginning too. Braids specifically only cheats in creatures, artifacts, and lands.
No enchantments.
And so you probably want to be low on enchantments, not necessarily zero, and low on instants and sorceries. Again, not necessarily zero, but those are cards that your commander just doesn't interact with favorably. So you don't want too many of those because you can get stuck with a ton of them in your hands and then you're not getting anything out of your Braids trigger.
Yeah.
So you just got to be, you got to balance it. You got to juggle it.
I think that this deck requires a tremendous amount of balance because it would be very easy for you to play Braids. It dies and then you're looking at your hand and it's full of 11 drops and your commander now costs 6 mana.
And you're looking at doing nothing, basically, until you can play it again.
What are you doing? Yeah, so I really think it requires a lot of balance, and don't go too heavy on the big mana creatures, but also make sure that you have enough things to put into play. It's pretty careful, but we're going to address that in a different category.
All right, so we're still under minimizing our opponent's triggers. The next sort of subcategory is copy their stuff, clone their stuff. If they're going to have something cool and you're not going to steal it, at least you can also have a version of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, we're going with sort of the best version of this, and that's one of them is Phantasmal Image, because again, it's so, so cheap. You're letting people put out huge things on the battlefield first, and you're like, okay, I'll copy it for just 2 mana. Phantasmal Image is 1 to blue for a 0/0 illusion. You may have Phantasmal Image enter the battlefield as a copy of any creature on the battlefield, except it's an illusion in addition to its other types, and gains when this creature becomes target of a spell or ability, sacrifice it. Are you afraid of that downside, Josh?
No, because normally if it's targeted by a spell or ability, it's dying.
Yeah.
Because they're not targeting you with something, you know, every once
there
in a while.
There are sometimes.
The Maze of Ith becomes really powerful against you then, but in general, you just don't attack that person then. Here's the thing. I really like what you said about wanting this stuff to be cheap. So Phantasmal Image, Gilded Drake, both cost 2. Think of the sequencing, the play pattern that's likely to happen. You play Blades on 4. The other 3 players put something awesome into play. Comes back to your turn. Trigger. You put something awesome into play, but you got it in after everybody else. Now if I go, boom, steal your thing. Now I have 2 awesome things. And you need to be thinking, I'm going to do that when I have 5 mana. I'm going to be doing that when I have 4 mana. And so you need that stuff to be really, really cheap because they're going to have 12 drops. I want that, but I need to be able to replicate it for 4 mana.
Remember how also I was saying it's really important to be able to threaten the ability of interaction. And so if you tap out for something, people are going to not feel bad swinging into you. Whereas if you're holding up enough mana to interact with them, even if you don't have anything, even if you have that bluff, then that's going to be pretty powerful. But every so often, you are going to have those spells that interact with their board. And so you can play something cheap to develop your board, take away this sort of imbalance, and then still have interaction available.
Yep. Okay. You have another in the copy category.
This is a fun one.
This is a plant form. It's 4 blue-blue for an instant. It says, return target creature to its owner's hand, and then you put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of that creature. Oh, this is so good with Braids, because they put something out that they actually probably don't have enough mana to cast.
Yeah, bounce becomes very, very strong in Braids because a lot of times when you bounce it, it's literally stranded in their hand. They can't do anything about it. So bounce almost becomes a removal spell, and then just making your own copy. It's a great 2-for-1.
Yeah.
But again, this doesn't reach the level of some of the other copy effects because it's 6 mana.
Right.
But pretty powerful.
It's instant speed.
I got one more piece of copy.
Okay.
Tech. And that's Sakashima Student. 2 blue-blue for a 0/0 human ninja. It has ninjutsu 1 and a blue, which means that you can return an unblocked creature you control to your hand and put Sakashima Student onto the battlefield. You may have Sakashima Student enter the battlefield as a copy of any creature on the battlefield, except it's a ninja, in addition to its other creature types. So on its face, this just feels like a normal copy.
Mm-hmm.
4 mana, copy something. Fine. If you have a chance to ninjutsu it, then suddenly it can sort of sneak copy something in. Listen to this play pattern, Josh.
Okay.
Okay. I've just let everyone put a bunch of stuff onto the board.
Right.
I'm looking down at my board, and I'm looking at my Braids, and I'm looking at my hand, and I just swing Braids at you.
Right.
Do you block my Braids and kill it with your huge creature you just put onto the battlefield?
Probably not. Also, especially if I want the trigger.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Probably not. Josh is like, you just want to suicide your Braids into my big creature. No blocks. Ninjutsu!
Ninja pose.
What happens? Then Braids comes back to your hand, so they also
don't get the trigger, and you get a copy of their...
And you copy anything on the battlefield that's gigantic, and then they just got smacked with something huge.
I like it. Look up... DJ. I don't like it as much as you do.
It is so satisfying for people to think they one-up you. They're like, no blocks. And you're like, I got more than I wanted to.
That's pretty cool. I like it. Okay, speaking of sort of bouncing and removing their stuff, the next category is removal. So, oh yeah, get out of here.
I did it off the side.
Okay, so let's talk about... Well, this is a card that was actually in your top 5 budget blue cards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's from this deck.
And we talked about it in that episode as like, oh, I know you like why you like this, because it's really good in Braids.
It's really awesome in Braids.
So it's Tide Spout Tyrant. What is it? 5 blue-blue-blue?
Yeah, it's just a fun, big creature.
This is the one where every time you cast a spell, you get to bounce an opponent. A permanent. And because you can cheat it in with Braids... All your mana is still untapped.
Uh-huh.
Maybe you can cast like 2 or 3 spells and simultaneously bounce the cool stuff they put in with Braids.
Oh, yeah.
Which means that they can just never catch back up to you unless they get rid of the Tide Spout Tyrant, basically.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful. Something that plays a really cool, not as powerful top end, but maybe a little bit of better card, Galecaster Colossus.
Mm-hmm.
It works with the wizard synergies that we're talking about. Whenever you tap, and you can tap an untapped wizard to bounce a creature. Tide Spout Tyrant has the ability to really answer anything because it's permanence. Because sometimes you just play a Tide Spout early, cast a few spells, and suddenly your opponents have no lands.
And based on the stats thing, bouncing people's lands actually might be one of the better things you can do, even if it's just 1 or 2. I think we get this thing in our head where you have to bounce all of everybody's lands for it to matter. But it might just be that bouncing like two lands per opponent will just lock it up for you. You'll just have too big an advantage from there.
Yeah. And also gives you the advantage to bounce your own Braids, which is nice to deny them the trigger. Okay, some other things that have bounce or just sort of removal in general. I like Reality Shift.
That's
an amazing budget card. We talked about it before.
Yeah, and the underperformers or underrated cards or something. Yeah,
totally underperformer. I love that card. It has exile in blue, and exile is really important. Instant speed too, so you can hold up the mana. You could do other forms of removal like Rapid Hybridization or Pongify.
Those it are also, really good. I think Reality Shift even better in Braids because Braids becomes this thing about having the, sort of the biggest thing out. And even if you manifest something from your opponent, Reality Shift exiles their creature and then they manifest the top card of their library. Well, they can't then have access to, if that's a big creature that's going to sort of go toe-to-toe with the other big stuff out there, they won't be able to flip it yet.
Yeah.
And if it's not, they can flip it up all they want and it's not going to deal with your It That Betrays, so who cares?
Exactly. Other bounce is really good, especially if it's multi, like, you can use it in a lot of different ways. So, for example, Mystic Confluence is great because this deck doesn't run a lot of counters, but sometimes you might need to defend your stuff because you're going to have cool toys.
Or so, otherwise, it just takes care of bing, bang, boom, everything every opponent put out last turn. Basically.
Like you had Braids on four, suddenly you have five mana, and then you just go bounce, 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 and it sets everyone back.
And now you're in the position you want to be in, which is basically equivalent to you getting the Braids trigger first.
Sometimes you can even go, like, let's say you didn't hit something, but you put a land into play. I could go bounce, bounce, bounce my own Braids.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
Braids
is really bad against all my decks because I just don't play very many big things. I mean, sorry, bad for all my decks. Every time you play Braids, I'm like, crap, everyone else is going to cheat out like 8 mana worth of stuff, and I'm going to play a 3 CMC something because that's all I've got.
Or play a land.
Yeah.
Or play a land.
Yeah. That's actually what I should do from now on because we learned that land drops are so important.
They're so important.
That it's an exploration. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So good. One other thing that's really similar to Mystic Confluence, Cryptic Command.
Yep.
The modes on Cryptic Command are insane. Countering a spell is good. Drawing a card is great. But bouncing, again, that's like a removal spell in this deck. But even better, Cryptic Command plays that role of redirecting your opponents as well because you can play it and tap down all the creatures of your opponents. They all get tapped down. So you can kind of fog one attack, but then as your opponent untaps, your creatures are untapped, but each of the other opponents are still tapped. And so they're going to send their awesome stuff towards the people who have tapped creatures. And so sometimes someone that comes at you, you tap down all their stuff, they get attacked by the next player. They get attacked by the next player, and then you attack them, and it's enough to close out a game. Cryptic Command, good card.
I heard it's pretty good.
All right, I got another bounce that I love, and Josh loves it too.
We talked about this in Olivia's Atrata deck. It's called Crystal Shard. It's 3 mana for an artifact. You can pay 3 and tap it, or you can pay a blue and tap it. So those are your two choices. You're going to pay a blue and tap it. And you return target creature to its owner's hand unless its controller pays 1. So it's amazing how many times people forget, A, that this is out there, or you just basically put a 1 extra tax on them, or 2, depending on when you're going to activate it. Because if you activate it on the end step, then they pay the 1, and then you untap with it and do it again, and they're like, crap, I didn't leave 2 open. So that sucks if you're the opponent, because do I just want to leave 2 mana open all the time?
This early in the game,
yeah,
too.
No, thank you. But and everybody has to do it, otherwise they lose their thing to you. Also,
this is so early in the game too, because this is like turn 4.
Yeah.
Suddenly at turn 4, you have to keep 2 mana open or else lose the big thing I gave you.
Yeah. That's horrible. A horrible position to be in. Also, it's target creature, so you can bounce your own Braids to deny them the trigger. So it has that duality, right?
Yep. That's exactly right.
Yep.
Let's talk about a weird one.
Okay. Yes, I've seen this come out in play before, and I had to read it like 15 times.
This is great. It's a weird one. I might just explain what it does in normal words rather than reading this.
It's like one of those
paragraph
ones
where
I don't even know if you can actually read the... Here, let me read it.
You want to read... But by the way, this is the... I downloaded the fixed version.
This is the Oracle text on it?
Yeah, this is the Oracle text. So this is the fixed version. And by the way, this card is a very corner case. It's very cool in this deck. It has shot up in price, and so it's a little bit expensive.
It's Taunos's Coffin. It's 4 mana for an artifact. It says you may choose not to untap Taunos's Coffin during your untap step. So if it's tapped, you don't have to untap it. You can pay 3 and then tap it, and you remove target creature and all auras attached to it from the game. Note the number and kind of counters that were on that creature. When Taunos's Coffin leaves play or becomes untapped, return the remove card to play under its owner's control tapped with the noted number of counters and kind of counters on it. And if you do, return the removed aura cards to play under their owner's control attached to that permanent. So
that's the fixed text, by the way.
Yeah. They should have simple thing, had it phase out or something.
It's actually a really simple concept, which is, hey, I got this card that's a coffin. If I tap it, I can put your creature in the coffin.
It still has all its stuff.
Yeah, it's just stuck in the coffin.
Yeah.
All right. And then if it ever untaps or it gets destroyed, you get your creature back tapped.
Yep.
So one thing that's really good is that I can put my own braids in the coffin and then deny you all triggers. And then this, when I untap it, it comes out of the untap step.
And then the
braids comes
there.
Back out. The upkeep, it's there so it can trigger. But also, this is that same threat that just sits on the battlefield. And I say, well, if I have 3 mana, I'll put your stupid creature in the coffin.
So don't attack me.
Don't attack me and I won't put your creature in the coffin.
Yep.
And if they do, you're like, all right, fine. Put it in the coffin and then it'll come back around again and you can untap it and give them their creature back. And it's tapped. You could even attack into them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a pretty powerful removal spell on an artifact, even though it's a little bit expensive, both in mana cost and in price.
You probably have a few random creatures in here that have enter the battlefield effects and things like that too, where work with those because, again, it leaves play and comes back. So
yep. Sphinx of Athun, you just stick it in the coffin. You're like, all right, well, get it back again.
Yeah, and you can do that on your end step as sort of a pseudo blink.
I'm going to block, put it in the coffin.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
Pretty fun.
So the last category under minimizing your opponent's triggers is what we call board wipes, ways to, you know, things can get hairy, can get out of control with this deck, right?
That's right. We talked about this card specifically.
I think you played it once against a mono green something deck, or maybe it was a Xenagos deck where I was, and it was like, this was bad because the person's just like, huge creature, every turn. They just had handfuls of them, and it was just like,
Yeah, for sure. So in terms of board wipes, we have cards like Evacuation, Return Everything to Their Hand, Instant Speed. That's important too.
Yep.
Again,
Psych Rift, of course.
You know, yeah. Cyclonic Rift. People are attacking you. Cyclonic Rift is actually good too because it can interact in the early game.
Oh, right? It's actually good?
No, I mean like...
yeah, you could maybe...
You actually use the other mode sometimes.
Okay.
You do sometimes.
It's actually good, everybody.
Cyclonic Rift for most of us is a 7 mana instant.
True.
Yeah, and this is sometimes even more flexible than... Cyclonic Rift.
Fair enough. Here's one of your favorite budget cards.
Yeah, Ixodron. We talked about this before, but 3BB for a star illusion enters the battlefield. You basically turn all other non-token creatures face down. And it has the power of toughness equal to the number of face down creatures. But this gets rid of so many problematic permanents. You're giving people amazing stuff. They're putting Avacyns onto the battlefield, crazy Eldrazi, and suddenly you're just like, yeah, the board's gotten a little bit crazy, guys. I let you play, but things have gotten a little bit out of hand. So I'm just going to make everything a 2-2.
Yep. A lot of times if they don't have card draw, this can really set them back so far because they might not have enough at that point to replace it. Also, it's for most decks, turning it face down into a 2-2 is worse than,
way worse.
Than putting it in their hand or in their graveyard because they can often reanimate it or recast it. But a lot of times with the 2-2 face down, they're just like, well, they have to start making deals to like trade creatures off, get it in the graveyard, reanimate it. It's a whole thing.
So like Oblivion Stone is also pretty good in this deck, but Ixodron has been way more of a powerhouse than really a classic, really solid board wipe is just because of the way it interacts with creatures and commander.
I like this next one. I have it in my Joyra deck, old school Joyra. It's Ketorect Leviathan, 6BB for a 5/5. It says, when the Leviathan comes into play, return all other non-land permanents to their owner's hands. So as soon as this enters, all other non-land permanents, that's mana rocks, enchantments,
by the way, your own braids,
are gone, and you just have a 5/5. You can also unearth it. So it says unearth for 6BB, and that means you return this card from your graveyard to play. It gains haste, and you remove it from the game at the end of turn, or if it would leave play, and you can only unearth as a sorcery. So it kind of gives you a sorcery speed board wipe type effect once it dies or once it gets to your graveyard. But this is really, really good in something like Braids because think of that tempo we were talking about, right? So I play Braids. I pass to DJ. He puts something awesome out. Jimmy puts something awesome out. Mel puts something awesome out. Comes back to my hand. I go, Ketorect Leviathan, bounce the awesome stuff you played, and then I play something. And now I'm ahead.
Yeah.
Whereas I would have been behind. And that's just on the first turn. You might let it go a turn or two, bounce two or three things, when you have more mana and you're the first to act. Because remember, the big thing about Braids is that you don't pay mana for the stuff. So the way to take advantage of it is to still to use your mana at a point when everybody else has nothing.
Absolutely. So those are kind of the board wipes. And now you can kind of imagine the deck, right? You can imagine the deck where you have awesome stuff to put into play. You have all of this interaction, these tricky things, this way to like use your opponents against each other. But there are a few cards that often see play in Braid's decks that I think are traps.
Ooh, I like this. This is the, you think they'd be good, but maybe they're not good.
Yeah, and I think that by understanding why these are traps, you'll understand a little bit more about how to play this deck or how I play this deck and have found a lot of success in it.
Okay.
So the first trap is Paradox Haze.
See, this seems like it'd be really good. So Paradox Haze is an enchantment that gives you an additional upkeep.
That's right. And with an additional upkeep, you have two Braid's triggers.
So I could cheat two things in.
That you're thinking that this would break that the equality
right,
that's going on here.
One,
everyone's
going
to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Turns out, like, two is a little bit overkill. And a lot of times, you don't have two to put onto the battlefield. This is a do-nothing enchantment that only works in your commander if it happens to work and if you have two great things to put onto the battlefield. It is not as good as you would think. A lot of times, you want to make sure that your one threat, your one thing is good enough to play with the board and to be able to interact with everything, that you really don't need two. This is overkill and too narrow.
It's interesting because it's the type of card that, and I agree with you, and this is the type of card that when I see it, I see a lot of people play it. My thinking is like, that's super greedy. And if you're building the deck in the way that you're talking about, which is to kind of like make sure that you're taking advantage of it with a bunch of cards. Notice when we talk about the good cards, we're listing five ways they're good in different situations. Mm-hmm. When's Paradox Haze good? One situation where I'm already doing the thing. And in that case, I'm probably good anyway, right? Because if I've hit my Braid's trigger two or three times in a row with nothing, no wrench getting thrown into the works, then that's my game plan. And I'm probably fine because I probably bounce my opponent's stuff with it and all this other stuff. So I don't need to get four things in two turns. Probably two things in two turns is enough. And I'd rather my other cards were stuff like Cryptic Commands and things that mess with what they're doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that Paradox Haze just...
Overrated?
Exactly. It's overrated. It's best case mentality, scenario mentality.
BCSM. Yeah.
That's right.
Shout out to Limited Resources.
Another card that people play a lot is an enchantment, an aura called Vanishing. It's one blue and you can enchant your own Braids and then you can activate it for blue and enchanted creature phases out. Phasing means that your creature will come back in before your upkeep.
Yep.
So that means that your Braids will in fact trigger when it phases back in again.
There's a way to deny your opponents the trigger.
Exactly.
Again.
You deny your opponents the trigger and you are the only one getting the trigger. The thing that I don't like is that this only works with your Braids. So you have to have your Braids on the battlefield, then you have to enchant it, and then you have to be able to activate it.
Yeah, true. I mean, wouldn't this also work with the cool thing you cheated in with Braids, though?
That's true. You could put this on the cool thing you cheated in and give it some level of protection.
I mean, like an It That Betrays. People are definitely going to want to kill that thing.
Yeah. So your sort of play style is have the Braids come in, so everyone gets their trigger. You put in the It That Betrays, and then you're able to put this on it and hold up double blue in order to phase it out. That's fine. I prefer different kinds of protection. I really like Kira Glass Spinner.
Great Glass Spinner, yeah.
I really like Swiftfoot Blutes and Lightning Greaves because they let you hit really quickly with that.
They also give haste.
Yeah, they also give haste and let you do a lot of damage. I like some different types of interaction rather than this because it's sorcery speed and you have to keep double blue up in order to activate it and it feels very clunky.
I think this is the type of thing people run into a lot in deck building, and it's hard to sort of come to terms with it. But it's not that this effect is bad, I don't think, because we can mention scenarios where it's good. But you just mentioned cards that you like better than it. And exactly. The problem is, how much of this protecting my stuff do you want in your deck? And the answer is not 50 or 10. It's probably 4, which means this is not unplayable. It's just getting bumped out by the stuff that's better than it. And your deck's gonna be better if you just play the best stuff in the categories that you can, that you need. And so this is the type of card that people look at it, that has to be in the deck. And then you're like, okay, but are you gonna take out
it's okay.
yeah, what are you taking out for it? It's not that, it's not crazy to put it in. It's just...
No, I just think it's a little bit of a trap.
Yeah.
That you have too many things to protect your stuff and too narrow of a way to protect it. Because this only protects it at sorcery speed. Because when you go to put this on something, they could just be like, yeah, I'll remove it or something like that.
True, although I think that's less of a worry, just how early Braid's stuff happens. And in general, Lightning Greaves and stuff has a similar problem.
But you keep your Greaves around for the next time it goes around.
It's true, yeah.
And by the way, the upside of Greaves is insane because you have haste.
Right.
And then you're smashing earlier on.
Right. If it betrays with haste, is pretty good. That's what they told me.
The last trap is another way to interrupt your opponent's effects, Braid's triggers, and then stifle effects. Stifle is a one mana instant that says counter target activated or triggered ability. You might have seen this more recently on Cycling Nimble Obstructionist.
There's a one blue counter spell that does it now.
Disallow. Yeah.
Basically, they've put this on a few things now, and I think all those things are a lot better than Stifle because they have flexibility. But man, a one-off effect to stop. It's way better to just have Crystal Shard. Person.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's way better.
Some people want to target that one person. They're like, no, you can't have that Braid's trigger. And it's kind of a fun thing because you're playing more politics where you're selecting which player gets the Braid's trigger and which players don't.
So you're using a card to do it. It just feels bad.
I feel like I need to have a really solid balance in this deck. I need to be able to have those big creatures, but then also I need to be able to have the ramp and card draw I need to support this game style. And so that gets us into the next category, which is how I think you should actually be building this deck, which is with enough ramp. People rely too heavily on the Braid's trigger in a Braid's deck. I know we've been talking about the trigger this whole time, talking about abusing it, but honestly, this should be a way to sort of create chaos in the game, sort of stall everything out, get crazy cards out of your opponent's hands and deal with them or send them at someone else. And then as you transition into the late game, you have the ability to just play haymaker after haymaker because your deck is built for the late game. Your deck is built to put 10 drops onto the battlefield.
And eventually you do want to cast that stuff.
Absolutely. So yeah. You need to make sure that you have plenty of ramp and card draw. I think card draw is one of the most important things. And I particularly like instant speed card draw. Imagine this scenario, Josh. My turn, Braid's trigger. Okay, I got some untapped mana. I have a Braid's trigger. Fact or fiction?
So it's an instant speed in response to the trigger you play it?
Oh, I like playing it in response to the trigger, definitely. Yeah.
So the Braid's trigger is on the stack for you and you cast Fact or Fiction, which is a 3 and a blue instant. It says, reveal the top 5 cards of your library. An opponent separates those cards into 2 piles, put 1 pile into your hand and the other into your graveyard. So they know you're going to be able to cheat potentially anything that you pick out into the battlefield with the Braid's trigger.
Yeah.
So that creates quite the conundrum for your opponent.
So much tension. So they have they see a Jenga Taxus and they're like, no, 1 in 4.
Right. Often this happens with Fact or Fiction where there's one card that's way worse than the rest. So you put one pile as one card and the other is 4 cards. And you're saying, well, at the very least, if you get Jenga Taxus and then cheat it out with Braids, you don't get the other 4 cards.
And sometimes I'm just looking at an it that betrays in my hand and I'm casting this anyways. I don't need the big creature. And then I'll take the 4 cards and get huge card advantage.
Although in that case, you still put Jenga Taxus out because you're going to drop to 7. But yes.
Yes, exactly. Or I'm like, all right, it doesn't matter. I've gotten 5 cards deep and I've gotten exactly what I need for my Braids trigger. And you put that onto the battlefield.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Another thing that gets super deep into your deck that gets you exactly what you need is a card like Dig Through Time. 7 cards deep, you get exactly what you need at instant speed. Then utilize that Braid's trigger and get exactly what you need onto the battlefield.
Dig is underrated. Very, very good card.
Very good card. But also, I think that ramp is definitely underrated in this deck. Playing Braids on turn 4 and then just waiting, I think your opponents have a lot of ability to develop their own board. So mm-hmm. I think early ramp is important, but... you can also play artifacts with Braids. So cards like Caged Sun or like Hedron Archive or these big mana rocks can easily be put into play. And then suddenly you have a big mana advantage so that you can start casting some of these spells instead of relying on the Braids trigger.
Yeah, it kind of goes along with what we were saying a minute ago and with the stats episode as far as we did count number of lands at the end of the game and not mana rocks because their lands tend to stick around. But in general, just having a lot of mana, we've learned, is way maybe more powerful than we even suspect. And so I can see putting in Hedron Archive or one of these big mana rocks into play rather than even a big creature, just to set yourself up better for future turns. That's something that's going to pay you dividends for, you know, three or four turns down the road. Is you're going to be up, you know, 12 mana sometimes.
And then also with your Hedron Archive, you can cash that in for cards when you need it later on too. So it gives you the mana advantage and the card advantage. But lots of mana
I like
rocks.
This as a better way to take advantage of Braids and sort of give you long-term advantage, right? Because if somebody goes huge creature, huge creature, huge creature, and you go Hedron Archive.
Or Cage Sun.
Cage Sun. They're all going to be eyeing each other because they all have the huge creature. And maybe, you know, hopefully you have your Aether Spouts or something else.
You're sitting there with interaction, yeah.
To deter them. And so they start looking at each other. And now not having a creature is almost a little to your advantage. And you just set yourself up to have more mana than everybody else coming to the next turn, you know, which can snowball.
That's how I play the game a lot of the time.
Yeah. It makes sense. You don't look scary. Everybody else looks scary. We've learned that turn 1-3-3 Soul Ring thing. We've learned looking scary is not in your favor.
Yeah. You're going over there being like, look, guys, you went crazy with this trigger. Like, all right, go at it.
And you get to go, oh, crap. I didn't draw stupid deck. I designed this thing to drop huge things, but the only thing I got, Hedron Archive. Okay, go. You know, you get to play it like your deck's misfiring.
You can. I don't think that only works once.
Even though you've got Tide Spout Tyrants in your hands, they don't know what you got. Maybe
it's
your
true.
Deck is
you don't know what you have. Yeah, exactly. One other way. So I prefer the mana rock, the develop your mana kind of style. But one thing that some people like to play, which I don't think is necessarily a trap, but it's not how I like to build it, is the Quicksilver Amulet route, mm-hmm. Which is basically let's double down on cheating big things into play. Quicksilver Amulet is an artifact for 4 mana. You can pay 4 and tap it. You may put a creature card from your hand onto the battlefield. So this is for 4 mana over and over again. Once a turn, you can put something big into play.
And basically, if you think of it as on the first turn that Braids triggers, you cheat this out and then activate with the mana you've got. You kind of break even that one time. And now you get two big things out. It's kind of like Paradox Haze, though. The way you seem to have built it, you don't even have enough big stuff that's going to even continue to be worth it.
Yeah. And sometimes my big stuff is pretty situational. Like that Keterk Leviathan is a big thing, but I'm going to want to save that for a very special occasion.
Right. Well, for when you have to. Otherwise, you may not even cast it in the game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like this. I like one of my favorite things about each deck is how it's, because every deck needs ramp and draw, but how each deck sort of wants their ramp and their draw to just have a little twist to it that's different than every deck is kind of something that, I don't know.
Yeah, this deck prefers instant speed card draw, so we might not play sorcery speed, so we lean in that direction. We do want ramp that gets us to Braids. But
you want big rocks, not little rocks.
Yeah, we might actually then like play the one mana rocks to, you know, get us into Braids. Like, you know, obviously Soul Ring and Mana Crypt to get a turn 2 Braids is great, you know, but then we maybe skip some of the more traditional rocks and jump up to some of the bigger ones.
Yeah, which is kinda interesting.
Cool. Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about, we got the deck. It's all built.
We got the deck, it's built.
This is the part of our deck text that we don't go into enough, but you've played this deck a ton.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Let's talk about in-game strategy, when you're playing the deck, sequencing and things like that.
Absolutely. So one thing that's great is that as you're coming into the game, people are expecting a certain type of deck when they're expecting Braids. Some group hug with quotes around it, maybe a little bit of interaction, but they're not really seeing you as a threat. It's not the traditional mono blue deck. If you come in with Talrand, people are gonna just really focus you. So being able to play up the idea that you're just having a good time is really important to establishing yourself as not a threat. We've talked about this before, to not be a threat.
Right.
And when you're looking down around the table at a commander game, then they're probably not considering Braids a threat. So that's the first thing that you do. And then one thing you have to remember is that each opponent gets the Braids trigger first. So one thing I mentioned is making sure you're very conscious about when you play Braids. Sometimes I can play Braids really quickly and I'm thinking, no, this is not going to be good. So be very wary of when you play Braids, and then make sure that there's some table talk going on. Like I mentioned earlier, when you ask the table if they want Braids, then it's pretty likely that it's going to come around and you're going to get a trigger as well. Sometimes you don't even need to get a trigger if you have strong enough political pull on the table. You can just give your opponents tools to destroy each other while you sit back. again, make deals, make them a gift. If there's a gift, then they feel obliged to help you back. They won't attack you. I'm like, if they go to swing at you, be like, I gave you that. What are you doing? Like, when would you have been able to cast that? And then by the way, sometimes if that one person is like, I don't believe you, and they swing at you anyways, you can sometimes, with your appalled nature of you, how you're just, oh, I can't believe I gave you that. Then Josh over there is like, he gave you that. Swings in. You can create rifts and friendships and then really manipulate people. But to be honest, are you really manipulating them? You gave them that. You're not really manipulating them. You're giving them tools to win the game, and they turn them around against you when you're playing four mana tutus.
I like everything the DJ's doing right now.
Oh my gosh.
It works, though. That kind of stuff totally works. It's great. It's one of my favorite parts about the game. It's what gives it its sort of werewolf mafia aspect.
Yeah, but and actually, that transitions to the next stage, which is this actually makes for a very fun deck.
Yeah.
Because you never play Braids just without saying a word, and everyone just silently passes it around. Everyone's talking when you're playing Braids. You're like, all right, is the Braids good? Let's do some Braids action. Braids good for you? And it gets people talking. It has people be like, no, don't play Braids. He's playing a Xenagos deck. What are you doing? or they're going back and forth with each other, and it opens up the conversation. It opens up the game. And people end up having a lot more fun when you have to talk about all of these interactions and when you open up the table to politics.
Yeah, it reminds me a little when I played against it. I have my 5-color Nakusar deck, which we've talked about a bunch on the show. The thing I like about that deck is that every time you play it, a lot of stuff happens. Mm-hmm. Braids is that type of commander.
Because people always have stuff to play. They're always drawing stuff.
In general, like, Braids is going to come out, and they're going to get to play an additional card without casting it, you know, on each of their turns. That just ratchets up the amount of stuff, just volume of it, you know, by a lot. And so you get these games where crazy stuff happens that maybe wouldn't happen under normal circumstances. And it doesn't mean you win. My net 5-color Nekusar deck probably doesn't really actually have a great winning percentage. But the games are always awesome because everyone's got a full grip of cards. See, that deck draws people a lot of cards. Mm-hmm. Your deck kind of puts a bunch of cards in play, but it's the same sort of outcome. And these decks are super fun to play.
And now you might understand why I shy away from a card like Jinkataxis.
Yeah.
Even though it's so powerful, like Braids and your Nekusar deck, these examples open up the game, let people play. Jinkataxis is like, discard your hand.
Yeah. It just stops that and really, frankly, gives people the wrong feeling about the deck. And one of the things about playing Braids, you're not always going to draw Jinkataxis, so you don't want them to be thinking in their head, screw that deck. That deck's no fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I see you pull out the Braids deck, I'm like, sweet, this is going to be crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And it has been. It has been crazy. Because it's really fun. And one other thing that's really great, and actually Josh Murphy, our editor, brought this up, is that it scales really well to the table. Basically with all the clone effects and the copy effects, the steal effects, and you kind of open it up for them to attack each other, you can sit down at a lot of different commander tables and be able to pull out Braids and feel with confidence like, yeah, this can hang kind of with what's going on.
I'm hitting you with your own thing. So you can't be expected not to deal with it because you had it in your deck.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's kind of quintessentially what the 75% theory is from Jason Ault.
I have a lot of non-75% cards in this deck that we're talking about. But honestly, it scales really well and is fun at different levels.
Very cool. I have a question here. Why is it your favorite? But I think you just told us why it's your favorite.
Yeah, it opens up the conversation. It lets people talk. And one thing that is also really good is that it can get out of almost anything. It all has so many answers. I think you've mentioned this before too, that you like decks that have a lot of play to them. And I feel that this Braids deck has a lot of play to it because it has big creatures, so you feel like you're not underpowered in the late game. And it's filled with answers.
You never feel like I'm just dead to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really important.
You don't have a ton of counter spells, but you have a few flexible counter spells. You don't have a ton of instants and sorceries, but you got the bounce. You got the little bit of removal. You have those Ixodrons that transform everything. You have the protection with your boots and your greaves and stuff like that. So you have a really well-balanced deck. And then you just happen to ratchet up and have a few fun interactions with Braids to start it off with.
I would say if you don't have a deck like this, my 5-color Nekusar deck, like I was saying, fills a similar role. They're great to have one in your arsenal also, because I don't know about you, but I'm going to guess that if you ever sit down for the first time with a group, this is the deck you pull out.
Oh, yeah. I pull it out all the
and
time.
And that's what I end up playing as my five-color Necrostar, because I know it's going... It has a chance to win. It's not that it doesn't. It's going to create fireworks. It's going to have fun games, and it's not, it's going to scale well with what everybody's doing and not just blow them out of the water. It's not like you want your best deck when you go into a situation that you don't know, but you also don't want your worst. So a deck like this really gives you middle ground, and it's the type of deck that just gets things going. And also, when you're meeting people for the first time, I mean, it's just human nature. I want them to like me, so I think they're going to like me a lot more if my deck's fun.
Yeah.
So, but again, I want a chance to win. And these decks do have them.
Yeah. Oh, it definitely does. And you would think like it shouldn't be, you know what I mean? Like you go around right. And you're like, okay, well, you know, I'm giving Braid Triggers to everyone else. This feels like it shouldn't be a very powerful deck. I win a lot with this deck.
Yeah, it's very good.
It's good.
I've definitely lost
deck.
To it.
It's a good deck. All right.
To the listeners, what commander deck generates the most fun for you? What commander deck do you have that sort of fits in this category that DJ and I are talking about? I'd love to hear about some more decks like this, because I think that most people would benefit from having, you know, one of these, maybe a couple of these in their arsenal, as they say, in their tool.
I'd like to learn about more of them too, because if you have like a fun build of your deck, then that sounds great. Because Nekusar doesn't feel like fun, but you're right. Like it is.
When I change it to the five color version, it is, right? Because I don't often draw Nekusar or get to Nekusar, and I just made everybody draw a bunch of cards, and the part where I tried to kill everyone didn't go well, and then everyone just had a bunch of cards and did cool stuff, you know?
But I even like Nekusar, where it's like, all right, I'm going to give you a ton of resources, but you're going to kill yourself with them.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a fun way to die. I will die drawing cards.
If I die totally. And I have 20 cards in hand, like, it can't be that
I'm
bad.
I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, can't be that bad. All right, well, if any of these cards sounded cool to you, or you have that favorite deck of yours that we just asked you about and you want to add some cards to it, please go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. You use that affiliate link when you order your Magic singles, products, anything at all. You're supporting this show, game nights. You're helping us do really cool stuff like the statistics episodes that we just came off of, things like that. Ultra Pro is another way to sponsor this show and to help us continue to do cool things. I was pausing there because there's a piece of content, and at the time we're shooting this, I'm thinking it's going to be out. It's a bonus piece of content for our 200 subs celebration. So if that's out, that's another thing we were able to do. Yeah, I think it's probably out by now. That's another thing we were able to do because of sponsors and things like that.
Oh, yeah, it takes up tons of resources, but we're able to put it together, which is awesome.
Now, you showed off your island
playmat.
I'm going to show off the Black Lotus playmat that I have right here. There are matching sleeves. There's matching deck box. There is a matching wall scroll, cloth wall scroll. This is all stuff that you can find online retailers like Card Kingdom or at your LGS. Ask them about it if they don't have it in stock. Hopefully they can get it in stock. Okay, time for the instep, where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. You got something?
Well, it's kind of cheating because I mean,
I'll take cheating.
It's inside the world of Magic.
Oh, okay.
Just kidding. It's actually a Netflix show called Magic for Humans.
Oh, I've seen it on the Netflix thing, but I haven't clicked on it.
Yeah. So it's probably no surprise that I like everything nerdy. And that includes literal illusions magic, too. Oh,
actual magic is great.
It's great.
Yeah.
And magic for... So a lot of times we feel desensitized to magic at this point in time, because if you see it on television, you think, oh, someone like Josh is behind this and that it's fake.
It probably isn't. Yeah. I probably am.
or you just feel like it's not edited well together. It just doesn't give you the same impression. And so magic kind of needs to be face to face to really, really hit you and really be good. I think that this show, Magic for Humans, actually gets around that, because it's about the human interaction in magic, where it's a lot of like fun interactions, and they still film it really well. And they go in and say that they're like, no, like this is real magic. These are real people. But I always love the people's reactions and the way that they kind of talk about different human issues while performing a little bit of fun stuff along the way. And some of the tricks are really easy and other ones, you know, and predictable. You could look it up online, but that doesn't matter, because it's how people interact and how the host really brings people into the story and into his craft.
I love magic. I will have to check it out. Have you ever been to, I'm sure you have, Magic Castle?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
My great uncle was a member there.
Oh, nice. Yeah, Freddie Wong, Jimmy's brother, is a member there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So, yeah, I still have yet to go there with him, but I've been many times. It's sweet.
Oh, yeah. I've been a couple
times. Up close magic is my favorite. Like, if you're sitting at the table with somebody and they're doing like the cards and the coins and stuff.
In the Magic Castle, like, it's a very cool building. You can look up stuff online, but you can like wander around and have drinks, but they're just magicians sitting at tiny tables And you can just walk up to them. They're like, here, let me show you this thing I've been working on. Wacha! And they just do magic.
Sweet. And they're
and
you're
they
like
big shows too,
2 feet from them, like right there. And you're like, wait, do that again.
But you and I honed in on the best part, which is like, you're right here. And they're like, let me show you something. Yep. Do you like car? They just do whatever. And it's great.
Yeah. If you're ever in LA and you can at all,
you need an invitation.
You need an invitation, but there's
ways. You can get them.
You can get them. Just look into the Magic Castle and try to figure that out. And in the meantime, watch, what's it called? Magic for Humans?
Magic for Humans.
All right, I'm going to check that out.
It's good.
Okay, very cool. Something else you should check out is our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern. Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman, they talk about the modern format and all things competitive magic. At the time we're recording this, that Chalice event at Card Kingdom hasn't happened yet, but the time you're watching it, it will have happened. And those two guys helped me put my deck together. And I'm assuming that I just steamrolled everybody.
I saw it. It's great.
Yeah.
Josh, I'm going to be disappointed if you don't steamroll that.
Jerry Thompson, down. Went down. Yeah.
Kenji, not a chance.
Took him down. Just everybody just took him down. I'm assuming that's what happened. It's, you know what the problem is? The deck that Alex and Ben helped me build is awesome. The person who's piloting the deck, I'm sure, screwed it up because I don't play modern.
Does that put more pressure on you, Josh?
No,
the deck is so good, and they're like, you can't lose, Josh.
They're like, why did you do
just
that?
Play our cards, you can't lose.
They're going to be sitting there like, why did you do that? And I'll be like, I have no idea. Because I'm a commander player. I didn't know that I should counter that thing, or I was supposed to bolt that. I was just didn't seem that bad.
To be fair, I don't know if you can know the meta of random booster packs that are drafted. Like, I don't think that's a known meta
game.
Okay,
good. Well, then that's going to be my excuse when I yeah. don't win, when Jerry Thompson steamrolls me. You know, something else that you should check out on the worldwide interwebs, and especially on YouTube, is Jumbo Commander. That's DJ.
That's me.
DJ is Jumbo Commander, and he has his own channel all about Commander. And if you just type in Jumbo Commander into your YouTube search bar, he's going to pop right up. And you got a ton of deck techs. You got...
Recently, I've been playing Singleton on Arena.
Yeah, so you've got some actual gameplay.
I've got Singleton some actual Arena gameplay. Stuff. I was trying to think of some Singleton deck lists, and I was looking at them, and there really weren't a lot of them online, or they're from like Kaladesh cards and stuff like that. So I was like, I want to play some Singleton. So I made a bunch of decks. I've been recording some videos with them. And I got to say that Singleton is fun. It might have converted me to being able to play Brawl.
No, oh, wow.
That's how fun it was playing Singleton Arena.
What's the Singleton deck that you've got right now that you like the most? What's it built around? What's the key cards? Don't do a full deck tech.
I won't do a full deck tech. But Sultai is really good because I think Search for Iskanta is amazing in this format. It's so good. It has some of the best removal spells, but most importantly, it has the ability to address the fast decks like Moment of Craving and
Assassin's
Glorious
Trophy.
Demise and stuff like that. Assassin's Trophy too. That sort of answers the aggro decks. And then once you get big, you just go over the top because you have things
like... Do you play
like,
Muldrotha?
I did not play Muldrotha in my first version because I didn't want to spend the mythic ticket on it. But playing all the planeswalkers like Vivian Reed is a house. Vraska is amazing. Dream Eater is insane.
Dream Eater.
Along with what's the 6/6 that surveils that's insane too?
Doom Whisperer.
Yeah.
The Flample one?
The Flample one. So really Crystal what you're Brand. Doing yeah, is you're playing a bunch of early interaction. You have these card advantage cards and then you get to the B playing those big haymakers over and over and over again, and it ends up being really fun.
So there you have it. Check out Jumbo Commander on YouTube. You get not only Commander stuff, but you also get into Arena a little bit. I actually want to watch
extra content too. I'm still putting out a deck.
Yeah. So look at that. Just bonus content out like crazy. This is bonus content for DJ too. It's nuts.
Know.
How do you have any time?
I'm like, I'm playing Arena anyways. I might as well record this. I better do well because I'm not doing a lot of takes on this.
I should play Arena and then I could record it. Don't get your hopes up, everybody. I'm a little bit busy. Okay.
This is my part because our editor is Josh Murphy, also pilots a Braids deck. Gave me some tips, and actually we think a lot alike in this area.
Yeah,
so
actually,
Murph's Braid
I've been
deck
playing
awesome.
Against Braids a lot recently because between you and Murph, it's like, okay, yep, Braids is in the pot again. Get ready for it. Yeah. Okay.
And special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer at Living Cards MTG.
Thanks, Jeffrey, for doing the Living Cards animations at the beginning and end of each episode, as well as our cool backgrounds. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeQuai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.